Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Tinker Talks podcast. This is your podcast that talks about all things happening behind the fence line at Tinker Air Force Base. I'm your host, Mark Hybers from the 72nd Air Base Wing. And today we have a great guest, one that we've had on before, not in video last time. We just did it in audio, but excited to have him back. And sadly, also to say that it's an outgoing podcast. We're with the Oklahoma City Air Logistics Complex Commander, Brigadier General Brian Moore. And sir, good morning.
Good morning.
Or good afternoon. I guess we've just snuck over the line.
Yeah.
So thanks for joining us, sir. Really happy that you got a chance to come back, and we're sad to see you going, but we'll get into that a little bit more as we move along through. Awesome. So we're going to jump in because it's been a couple years since we had sat down and talked through things, but we're going to go back to some of your priorities that we discussed the first time. And of course, you had a list of your priorities, but one of those priorities was talking about creating or standing up a digital depot. Mm-hmm. So if you could just kind of remind us of what digital depot means and where that's gone to this point.
Thanks, Mark. So first, I appreciate the opportunity to come back and for multiple reasons, in part because, you know, a lot has happened in 2 years. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's gone so fast, and yet so much has been achieved that it's appropriate to have a conversation with you and talk to folks about it and help them understand some of the implications, which is daily execution, mm-hmm. but it's also looking to the future of what it means for the organic industrial base. So questions about priorities, you know, 2 years ago, at least in one case, we talked about digital depot. I think digitalization of the workforce and the digital depot, mm-hmm. along with manufacturing and specifically advanced manufacturing, were two critical areas that had to be advanced. And I'm pleased to say that the team has really embraced that. And they were embracing it when I arrived, but now we've put some real plans in place to further it and look towards the future and what that means for this depot. Digital depot in particular, you know, gets more specific. Mm-hmm. We have initiatives like thinking about training and our workforce development, AR, VR, virtual reality training, AI for really understanding what needs to be trained to look into workloads in the future. You know, if you think about what that means and how people learn and train and develop, we have to transform the workforce. So I'm pleased to say that the leadership team here has done a great job thinking through that problem set and bringing some initiatives in that have plans of action behind them. On the manufacturing side, which is really a form of digital, think reverse engineering activities, and then how that translates to tech data packages and being able to then produce parts with the tech data that we created. It's amazing what this team has done, not just to bring in capability and capacity, but to also bring in workload. You know, I think since I arrived here 2 years ago, it's been tenfold of increased workload. We were just assessing the hours, right, and literally 10 times the amount of workload since when we had this conversation previously. So those are two major kind of future looking things. On top of that, our daily business of producing to promise and meeting commitments to our warfighters, mm-hmm. has still, you know, keeping the main thing has still been at the top of our list. And I'm pleased to say, you know, where certain areas might have regressed a touch when I was here earlier, you know, we have, no kidding, recovered in some areas, exceeded in other areas. We're working with the enterprise to really advance some of those tougher workloads, both on the aircraft engines and the exchangeable side. And we've got good plans for execution on how to keep meeting our commitments. So this depot is fantastic in meeting its requirements, and they've been doing that every day since I arrived.
It's a unique place here, this depot, and it's hard to explain it. It's hard to talk about it. You know, it's very old. I mean, it's kind of the whole reason that Tinker is here is kind of what started in this building. And of course, the workforce is kind of creeping along in age. So when you come in and you start talking about digital depot, you know, that's probably a lot for some people to grasp the concept. And even, I mean, AI was kind of coming around, but you know, when you started talking about it, sir, like that really wasn't what it is now. Like AI was not quite where we're at today. So very innovative and creative and definitely good forward thinking by our leadership here to be able to get the train of thought in and get people of like me that are, you know, sizzling along in age, right? Yeah. Like we have to grasp that and embrace it and move on. So
yeah, I just to expand a little bit, I mean, I think we need to recognize, and I probably said it the first podcast, but in this depo, our mission is combat ready air power to produce it for the warfighter. And that includes the oldest old stuff,
right,
as you kind of alluded to, as well as the newest new, right? Bringing in the B-21, the expanding the KC-46 campus. Both of those platforms are completely digital platforms. You know, we like to say if the KC-135 has, you know, 100,000 lines of code in it, you know, the KC-46 has millions of lines of code in it, and we're talking digital maintenance in that regard, right? So you kind of got to have the ability, the capability to do the oldest old and the newest new.
Right, it's wild to think about. I mean, it's just hard to wrap your brain around. So over the last couple of years, you've had a lot of successes running this group and this very large command. Can you think of one that stands out that might be your biggest or your best?
So what kept me up at night was in some ways we are the strategic center of excellence for propulsion. This complex is. Right. And what kept me up at night was making sure we're being able to execute on the propulsion end. You know, probably kept me up at night on aircraft too, but that has been consistent and standard over time, as has exchangeable commodities, different commodity lines. But engines is such a strategic work set, high technology, you know, very costly, and every weapon system and mission across the Air Force are dependent on our ability to produce thrust, right? And so on our 16 engine lines, what concerned me the most was progressing them, meeting the commitments, and thinking to the future. Probably the one of the great, there's a bunch of great achievements, but one of the great achievements is the way the enterprise has really come together over the last 2 years to think about the future of organic propulsion. And I'm just proud to say, working with Mr. Sneeden and the LP team, that we are thinking about and planning for strategic propulsion workloads in the future. We were already working F-135 engines. We're planning for the future on that collectively with our industry partners, Pratt Whitney in that case. But we're also thinking about bringing in, you know, T-108 workload and, you know, whatever future engine propulsion requirements look like. We're working that, the KC-46, F-139 potential, just a whole lot of future planning activities that are really coming together. And those were unknowns the last time you and I had this conversation. And so probably one of the greater achievements is that those planning efforts, you know, across the enterprise, across with the defense industrial base, are really coming together. Still significant constraints, you know. I mean, like I said, materially, technology, engines are tough. But I think if we keep the focus on it like we are, we're going to be in a good place. And that includes the test cells that go with it. In this case, we're looking at Agile Common Engine test cell capability that spreads engine test across the continuum of engines in this depo. So really excited about that. Plenty of other achievements to talk about, but that's one that's so strategic in nature.
Yes, we'd be here for a couple of days probably if we talked about all the achievements.
Right.
It's a good group over here. But you bring up an interesting point that we didn't really plan to discuss, but it's the future workload. I think a lot of people, I don't think, ever really quite realize that there's like a team under you that is consistently looking for what are we working on 5, 10 years from now, you know, as this, maybe this platform starts to phase out, like, how are we going to keep bringing this in? I think that's huge.
Yeah, so under our OB team, Mark Astorga, and then Jimmy James in our planning, OBP planning, they've done some incredible work to really think about the future. And it's not just thinking about it. There's distinct planning activities that have to take place to activate workloads, and they're doing all that integration and setup. And so they've really done a great job, particularly on the propulsion front, but I mean, on the commodities front too. I mean, think of all the commodities that have to be stood up for new weapon systems, like the KC-46. Right. They're doing some really incredible work to activate these workloads and keep us sustainable.
It's wild. And your AOP is working well over there too. I know when we bring honorary commander groups through, and the KC-46 folks are running down their AOP stuff and where they've come and getting the now the test flight cell, 10th Flight's test squadron up to speed to start flying check rides. And
so that's interesting, AOP being our production culture, art of the possible, theory of constraints, for those who aren't as familiar with it. What I'll tell you about that is under Colonel Jeff Anderson, Mr. Steve Stoner, and Mr. Mike Hostetter, they really have, the fundamentals remain the same, but in the vein of digitalization, they've overhauled the AOP too to smooth out that integration across stakeholders. And to your point, the KC-46 is indicative success from that overhaul. You know, the team working together to bust constraints, particularly in KC-46, as new breaks happen on a new aircraft. AOP is kicking in, like you suggested. Yeah,
right. All those unknowns. And for people like me, you know, the civilians that get to stay here and stick with our mission sets here, unlike like you, sir, who, you know, you have a set time limit. Like, I get
way
to watch.
Way too short.
Yeah. Right. I get to watch all these things kind of play out over time and see, like, you know, the stuff that pops up that nobody expected or never foresaw coming. And then the work that you're doing with your teams in areas like an AOP, for instance, to have them creatively, quickly get to solving those problems.
I've really been pleased with how the team has responded to, you know, my thinking, and I don't think it's too uncommon, but in sometimes we get heads down in producing, right? And we can really be focused on this year's execution. I've pressed the team to think, you know, short-term, mid-term, long-term, all the way out to 2050, you know, 25 years from now, you know, with how budget cycles work and our funding activities and all those. It's hard to think out that far, but you have to make sure we're planning for the future and we will be relevant for the future in that regard. So we're looking at ALC 2050 type vision activity and then making it executable, you know, in the short term and the midterm to focus on that. I'll give you one example. We have to think about manufacturing. Right now, you know, when I got here, we were probably 99.9% maintenance, repair, overhaul. Based on what we said on manufacturing a second ago, I mean, I would venture to guess we're getting closer to 1%, which is not insignificant when you're talking about 7.3 million hours worth of work, right? Where we need to be 25 years from now is about 25% manufacturing. So I challenge the team to bring in 1% a year for the next 25 years, focusing on manufacturing. Digital material management is the grease that will revolutionize the processes to get to that 25%. That keeps us relevant and viable and ultimately producing sustainment for the warfighter.
That's really wild, because it kind of goes, like, that takes us all the way back to day one almost in this building. Like, that's just not something that we've been thinking about for a very long time. And before we move on, I think, and you'll probably downplay this, sir, but I think that says a lot of quality about your leadership that, you know, it wasn't 2 years, let's focus on whatever we can bang out in my 2 year and then hit the door. Like, you to think 25 years down the road and be preparing your team for that is,
well, so those, you mentioned those 30 plus year civilian airmen, The only way we can do that is because of their expertise. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they've been here 30 years. So they remember back then thinking forward and what that looks like. And their experience is incredible. You're absolutely right. You know, as we move through our military careers, we get 2 and 3 year snapshots of different organizations and mm-hmm. we get this kind of broad picture. But we don't see maintenance, repair, overhaul, and manufacturing in a real detailed way. Right. But these senior civilian leaders in the complex, Mr. Laughlin and Mr. Astorga and Ms. Jones and others, in combination with the groups in AMXG, PMXG, so our engineers, Mr. Bartlow, Mr. Stallman, they can see, you know, what this means. And then for each of the specific groups, they see it from their lens. So Mr. Kaufman in CMXG, Mr. Victorian in PMXG. And then we cannot forget, but the maintenance support group under Mr. Gill, because they're kind of the thread that's keeping it all together from a facilities infrastructure, you know, labs and different, you know, Metcal type activities. So right. Huge impact. They can see the future and they, you know, they can put plans in place as long as the vision is correct. And mm-hmm. then collectively as a team, aligning and realigning to keep us focused and moving forward. And
would you say with such a huge civilian population here under your leadership, which is also unique to this place, the ALC, are those people and the things you were just talking about kind of the driving force on how you keep that civilian workforce focused on mission and their ability to produce the promise, as our three-star likes to say?
Well, so interesting. Yes, they absolutely keep focus, but this is a layered approach. I'm sure at some point you were going to ask me a question about first line supervisors, but I'll preempt it maybe a little bit because we have focused on that. And how do we keep the national treasure of this workforce, you know, equipped, trained with the time and the tools and the tech data? It's in layers, it's in leadership layers. First line supervisors are directly helping their people be successful to produce. Mm-hmm. But then we have second, third, you know, senior level leaders helping take care of the vision to the environment, to the policy, to the tools, to the actual execution, you know, whether it's scheduling, planning. There's a whole lot of layered activity here, and so we like to say it takes a village, right? Right. I mean, there is a lot of responsibility distributed, and these folks know what they're doing. It does keep, I think alignment is really, really important. Good and our point. Senior leaders do a great job, but I think we've made some significant headway in gaining alignment over the last 2 years.
Right, and that could be difficult. It's not a small organization. So when you first came here, did you have, when you took maybe the first 30, 60 days, or maybe even before you got here, did you have a set of goals that you tried to line out for yourself, and how did they work out over time? Did you have to shift? Did you meet your goals?
So yes, I definitely had, I would say priorities maybe, and then the team based on those priorities helped kind of fill in the goals. There was a couple things that I knew we had to do. Mm-hmm. One of which was bring in Digital Depot. Another which was advanced manufacturing. But in addition to that, and I started working this not knowing exactly how it was gonna go, we needed to think about posturing repair forward. So over the last 20 years, we have centralized repair to the depots, right? If you remember back in 1995, there was base reduction and closures. We went from 5 depots to 3. That was even further consolidation and centralization. Well, based on the threat environment out there today, we need to think about how we posture repair more at the point of need and closing the gap between mission generation and our maintenance repair overhaul activities. And so working with Colonel Jay Martin, who's my mobilization assistant, we've come up with a concept under General Hawkins's GENUS concept. Mm-hmm. His is, so GENUS stands for Global Enterprise Network for Universal Sustainment. Think sustainment activities forward in partnership with allies, partners, industry partners, as well as our own organic repair capability forward, posturing for the next bite, right? Mm-hmm. Within that, Colonel Martin and I came up with a concept called GENUS Falcon. Falcon is an acronym, Forward ALC Operational Node. And it essentially embeds depot artisans with operational units. Why do this? Mm-hmm. Because one, we need to get faster with discipline on repairing so the warfighter can produce to mission requirement.
Right.
So two, we need to maintain the efficiency and effectiveness within the depot apparatus to continue to be successful here while we posture forward to help mission generation. Mm-hmm. In this concept, we take depot artisans who are still tied to our business processes, our production processes, our quality, safety, training, and we forward posture them. Right now, it's CONUS, and we're looking at a few other areas like Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson, maybe Hickam, some areas potentially overseas, but we haven't started those yet.
Right.
And we're actually performing depot level maintenance in operational units. This is a big deal. We've actually produced in Dias on B1 Avionics. We've produced on KC-135s at Fairchild. We've produced overseas at Kadena. And we've produced some engines at Seymour Johnson. It's really, it's a big deal because we're putting LRUs back in the hands of flight lines. Mm-hmm. We're remaining financially solvent. And in addition to that, we're training blue suit airmen on certain higher level system knowledge while we're able to produce. So it's really a great partnership with these operational units. And I think it focuses our readiness and repair at the right places as we develop this program out.
It's actually really exciting. I'm trying to not be too giddy about it because I mean, I really think that this is really neat stuff. And because for the last few years, we've been really talking about mission capable airmen, mm-hmm. and the agility of our young force and how we're going to maneuver them out and make sure that decision making's happening at little lower levels. But I mean, I don't think that, certainly not in our area, we hadn't been thinking about this sort of thing, like taking right. civilians or you know, these types of civilian and doing the same sort of thing, like teaching them how to be more agile and capable and sending them out. But
yeah, just to be clear, you know, because I folks will think we're putting civilian airmen in harm's way,
right?
And that is not the case. Right. These are scheduled, mm-hmm. largely scheduled, depot level activities that fall in on already established bases out there, mm-hmm. to help expedite those repairs.
Yes.
But when you take a depot level artisan who's been working that workload for 15, 20, 25 years, and you put them side by side by a brand new airman, maybe straight out of high school, you're able to transfer knowledge that's really been centralized over the last 20 years. We're able to transfer not just repair capability, but knowledge back to folks in the field. And I think it's just huge. I think it's a force multiplier. Already gaining big traction. I think it's going to be a big win.
Right, for sure. And thank you for clarifying that. Yes, when nobody is going out into the field of fire out there, but still so exciting because it's just not like it kind of falls into that agility and,
yeah.
and stuff. But yeah, nobody's in harm's way. So you have worked with great leaders in your time. You've named a bunch of them. Have you been able to take away any valuable leadership lessons from all the great leaders that you've worked with here?
So probably the greatest surprise and lesson from these senior leaders is that we all have our, I'll say, strengths and weaknesses, right? Mm-hmm. But what's great about our institution is we bring them all together for biggest effect. You know, I'll just give you a couple examples. There's folks that grow up in the financial elements of our business, and they know how to run the business wheels of this massive institution. Mm-hmm. There's other folks that grow up on the production side, and they know, they've mastered flow and scripting and part supportability implications. They know how to produce, right? And there's engineers that we have, there's support activities, there's so many different things. And as they grow up in these different areas, we have to bring them together mm-hmm. to really capitalize on the collective wisdom of all of them. Because you know, I remember our four-star used to say, one of us is not as good as all of us. Mm-hmm. And that is absolutely true here in the depot. So my big takeaway is, you know, bring them together, and it's a compounding effect for effectiveness, you know, and it's really an incredible group of people. It's been, for me, it's just been so eye-opening to see what they can produce together as they capitalize on each other's experience and expertise. It's just fascinating.
It's awesome. Good lessons for the future. And so now that you've been here and you're starting to wind down this part of your tour, and not your first time at Tinker, but in the command and leading, is there anything about this position in your last couple years here that's surprised you at all? Or what surprised you the most, I guess I could say?
I'll kind of contrast the strength with mm-hmm. the weakness. And the weakness is that we are such a complex enterprise of sustainment mm-hmm. that sometimes it can be surprising how difficult it can be to move the enterprise forward on meeting all the commitments that we need to. So surprising in a good way, you know, we kind of looked at how that integration was happening. And if you remember, I came here with a focus on integration. Mm-hmm. You know, General Richardson, our four-star boss, made it clear that we have to integrate not just across the centers within Air Force Materiel Command, but within ourselves, right? And I really think that that's the critical need. Maybe the weakness that had to be really aligned and focused. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was surprising to understand how much of that we need. I'm pleased to say that, you know, through our processes, we've shored some things up in our aircraft missile reviews. It's a standard acronym. Mm-hmm. Under product support, the Air Force is moving that way, but we need to keep moving it forward, because it's absolutely critical to make sure our supply chain and our engineers and our maintainers and our program managers, along with the operational MAGCOMs, are in sync, moving together, understanding each other's challenges, and moving that forward for most aircraft availability that we can, you know, squeeze to meet warfighters' requirements. That's not an easy task, but the processes exist. We just got to stay focused on it. And so, surprising in a difficult way, but also where we've come in it to kind of reinvigorate it, you know, kind of a back to basics in product support. Mm-hmm. And I'm pleased to say we're getting aligned and focused in that area too.
Love that. And you know, it's such an interesting perspective from back here in the support role in everything we do here, because the warfighter really probably never takes a moment out of their day to think back into everything that you just said in a 30-second soundbite mm-hmm. about what it takes to do all this. Is just, it's baffling, but cool for us, you know, cool for them, because their stuff works
right
when they get it because of your team. But
yeah, and you know, kind of cross-checking that the whole time on what their mission requirements are, to include operational as well as training. I mean, they've got to fly to train to be able to fight. And so we as a collective enterprise have to produce and sustain to meet that requirement. And there's a lot there that has to remain aligned and moving forward together.
Awesome stuff. So with that, sir, is there anything that you'd like to say to your team as you get ready to depart?
Yeah, I would just say thanks for serving this great institution. And I do mean the Air Force Institution, but I also mean the Oklahoma City Air Logistics Complex, the sustainment enterprise, the Air Force Materiel Enterprise. It's critical to warfighting. And the fact that folks would dedicate their lives, their professions, and you know what that means for families and support, it's quite an honor to be able to serve alongside them. For me, it's the honor of a lifetime. I can't see how it gets any better than this. But you know, for the 2 years I was blessed to be able to be a part of it, it was just amazing. Incredible Americans, incredible Oklahomans doing our nation's work. And so I would say to my team, thanks for dedicating your professional lives to it. And I think it's a righteous cause that we're all serving.
Awesome. Thank you, sir. And appreciate the leadership for the last couple of years. It's been a great run.
Thank you.
And I think we'll leave it with that. We'll let you get back to work because you're not gone yet.
Yeah, if I could say one more quick thing.
Oh, absolutely.
And only because, you know, we can only do our job with the community support. Mm-hmm. And I remember General Kirkland used to say, you know, the best communities make the best bases. Our folks are only able to do what they're doing because this community is the best in the country serving Oklahoma City Air Logistics Complex. So thanks to the community as well.
Awesome. Well said, sir. And so with that, we are going to wrap up this episode of the Tinker Talks podcast. Thanks, General, for coming
Thank
out
you.
And spending some time with us. And please don't forget to follow us on the socials. You can find us at Facebook and Instagram at Team Tinker. And of course on X at @team_Tinker. And also check out our YouTube page and our website page. And also just a quick plug for our air show that's coming up. You'll be able to come out. And of course, when we do the air show, one of the big things is to come show the public why you have this base here and to show you some of our mission sets. And an awful lot of the mission sets that you'll see have everything to do with what the General was just discussing with us. So until next time, be safe out there. We hope you see you at the air show and have a great week.